second switch.
This way.
Okay, so this week is Matot Mas'e, so double Parsha. And if we look at the beginning of the Parsha, which we have here, it's a particular topic, the topic of Nedarim, of vows. Vayadaber Moshe Roshei HaMatot Livnei Yisrael Lemor. Moshe spoke to the leaders of the tribes of the children of Israel, saying, Zeh hadavar asher tzivah Hashem, this is the thing that God commanded. Ish ki yidor neder l'Hashem, a person who makes a vow to God, or he shovah shvua, or he makes an oath, le'esor isar al nafsho, to prohibit something for himself, lo yachel dvaro, he should not profane his words, kechol hayotze mipiv yaseh, according to everything that he says that comes out from his mouth, he should do. And it goes on speaking about the case of a woman who makes a vow, and in certain ways, certain kinds of vow, her husband can, as it were, intervene and can cancel her vow, or her father, if she's a young unmarried, younger unmarried girl. And that's the topic which is there in the Torah. However, the sages in the Talmud introduce an extra concept, which is really only hinted here. Why does Moshe speak El Roshei HaMatot? Why does he speak only to the, or specifically to the leaders of the tribes? Because Chacham Matir Neder. There is the concept that a Chacham, a sage, the Bet Din, are able to in some way release a vow. So a person can make a vow about something which you know, they don't want to they don't want to have benefit from a certain thing. I'm never going to eat tomatoes. And they make a vow that they're not going to have tomatoes, but and then for some reason this becomes very problematic, and it turns out that the only cure for a certain kind of ailment, God forbid, the only cure is a certain kind of tomato. And they may come to the Chacham, to the sage, to the Bet Din, and say, look, the Bet Din says, if you would have known that tomatoes are a cure for certain kinds of illness, would you have made this vow? And he says, no, I never imagined that tomatoes could be a cure for an illness. So in that case, they can release the vow. So that's a concept about vows. Of course, the discourse is going to take this in some kind of spiritual way. So let's explore it in terms of the Maimah, the discourse, which was said 1983 on the Shabbat of Matot Masei, as this Shabbat, which also, like this Shabbat, it will be Mevorechim HaChodesh Menachem Av. There's another minor melody actually, which people often sing. Doesn't always work. Okay, it's an interesting thing. Well, I have to do without the melody. Vayedaber Moshe El Roshei HaMatot Lemor. Moshe spoke with the heads of the Matot, saying to the heads of the tribe, saying, Zeh hadavah asher tzivah Hashem Lemor. This is the thing which Hashem commanded, saying, Ish ki yidor neder. If a person makes a vow, and that's how it continues. The Maimah says, it's incidentally not Muga, it's not edited, checked by the Rebbe. V'yuduim hadiyukim b'zeh, it is known the points that are raised about this, b'durushei pashat matot, in the ma'amarim, in the discourses on this parsha, b'lukutei Torah, in lukutei Torah of Rabbi Shneur Zalman, u'b'durushim shel achazeh, and the later discourses, u'b'fchat b'dibur maschil zeh b'shnat ateret. And especially with this, a mimer beginning with this way of the year, can you work out what is a teret?
No, I can't.
See, Tov Resh Ayin Tet. So that's 5, 6, 7, 9. And the way you work out the English year is by adding 240 to the last digit. So 5, 6, 7, 9, you add 247, 79 plus 40 is 19.
1919?
That's right. 1919, yeah. And also, B'divo Maschalzeh, Lebala Geula, Diyud Beit Tammuz. And also, Rabbi Yosef Yitzhak, the previous Rebbe, said a mimer on the 12th of Tammuz, and it's not quite certain, the footnote has a question mark, which mimer is meant, but he said something in 1923 and certainly 1949, or another, something to do with 1949. So, this is based, in other words, the teaching we have here is based on a series of previous teachings. The Shorashim of all those teachings is a very interesting topic, and Professor Moshe Chalamish wrote a PhD on the sources of Rabbi Shneur Zalman's writings in earlier Hasidut and in Kabbalah. So it's, which unfortunately that PhD was never published, but it's possible to obtain it, I think, just as a PhD. And he published many other books, but not that one. And so there are these sources of this concept, and this is it's bringing this idea of nadarim, a vow, which in itself is an interesting thing. As the Talmud says, which he's going to quote, isn't it enough for you that all the laws of the Torah telling you this is forbidden and that is forbidden? What do you have to make another thing forbidden? It's lo dayecha ma she haTorah oseh. Isn't that enough? But it's made into a more searching psychological, spiritual analysis of the person in relation to existence. That's really what is happening in this. So they ask in these discourses, they all have this question. Ma'in yan hanedarim, what is the concept of a neder, of a vow? She'oseh l'atzmo davar mutar, he forbids for himself a thing which is permitted. We're not talking here about a person encouraging himself to keep the halakha. You know, the halakha says you mustn't do this, and he somehow promises himself, I'm definitely not going to do that. But that's what the halakha already forbids. Here we're talking about a thing that's permitted, and he makes it forbidden for him. The Itab Yerushalmi, as we learn in the Talmud Yerushalmi, Lo dayecha b'ma she'ascha Torah, isn't it enough for you what the Torah forbids? Ela atah she'ata mevakesh le'esod dvarim acherim, you want to forbid more things, other things. Ve'im kein ma ma'alat ha'nedarim, what is the special quality of a vow? Mash oseh l'atzmo davar mutar, the fact that the person forbids on himself a permitted things. Gam tzarich lavin, we also have to understand. Mash be'inyan ha'nedarim medayek ha'katuv lomer, ze hadavar. Now that's another point. In this section about vows, it uses the phrase ze hadavar in the first verse. Moshe spoke to the leaders of the tribes of the children of Israel, saying, "Zeh hadavar asher tziva Hashem. This is the thing which God has commanded." Now, the sages in the Midrash point out there are different expressions, different ways of communicating divine words. Like the prophets often said, Ko Amar Hashem, thus said Hashem. Now, one of the 13 principles of faith of the Rambam, which he wrote in his introduction to Perek Chelek, in his commentary on the Mishnah, and when it comes to the Perek, to the chapter in Sanhedrin, which begins, Kol Yisrael yesh lahem chelek l'olam haba, every Jew has a portion in the world to come. And then he goes on and says, and these are the ones who don't have a portion in the world to come. So he then presents an assessment of what are a definition of what are the precise beliefs of Judaism, which you could say that this, a person who subscribes to these beliefs has a Jewish belief, and if there's one or two of them missing, then there's something wrong. So one of the principles is that the prophecy of Moshe is greater than that of the other prophets. It's not enough just to believe in all the prophets. That's one thing. But also one has to believe in the prophecy of Moshe as something special. And one aspect of that is that it's Moshe's Torah, which gives us the commandments of the Torah. And one could imagine people saying, yes, the words of the prophets are very beautiful, Isaiah, Amos, yes, I live with them. Of course, all this stuff about not working on the seventh day and stuff like that, I'm not so much interested in that. That's only in the Torah. That's not in the beautiful prophet. So one has to be able to recognize the grandeur of Moshe. Now, one aspect of the grandeur of Moshe, as described by the Chachamim, by the sages, is that Moshe uses these words, Zehadava. He speaks in a very direct way about God's teaching. It's as if the prophet sees through an ispaklaria she'ena me'ira, through a prism which is not clear, whereas Moshe speaks or sees through ispaklaria ha'me'ira, through a clear prism of vision. Right?
Nobody else uses that a lot.
Apparently not. I mean, I didn't search digitally the Tanakh. But if they did, it would be explained away in some. I think Zadava, perhaps not only here, but Zadava is specific to Moshe. There's a beautiful Rosh Hashanah mama, a discourse for Rosh Hashanah, which focuses on the difference between Koama Hashem and Zehayom Tchilat Na'atecha. This day is the beginning, Rosh Hashanah is the beginning of God's work. And as in distinct to Ko, which is like the Nevi'im, which is the 25th of Elul. So there's the 25th of Elul is the day the world as a whole was created, and Rosh Hashanah is when Adam was created. So it's a higher level. So that's like Ko versus Zeh. So here we have it in a different form. It's a fascinating concept because it has to do, you know, you could say, with semiology, you know, with what existence is. Is it that we are able to? Can we actually say Zehadava? This is the thing. It's like there's some tremendous step is being achieved by this statement, Zehadava. This is the thing. And this will be understood k'mavur b'adrushim, as is explained in those earlier teachings. Al pi mash amru razal, according to what the sages tell us b'mishnah d'avot in Pirkei Avot, and which is in chapter 3, as it says in the footnotes, nedarim siyag l'prishut, vows are a border, a fence for prishut. Now, prishut is the concept of abstinence. And there are different ways of understanding the concept of prishut. In fact, one of the dividing lines between the Hasidic movement and the earlier Kabbalists is often described as the difference between people who were very focused very much on abstinence of various kinds, whereas the Hasidim in some way rejected fasting, and yet at the same time there is an ambiguity within Hasidism as well, and the whole relationship to worldliness, as it were. And there's a sense in which the Hasidim find a greater degree of not being trapped by worldliness by eating, not by fasting. If you fast, so you fast, then eventually you have to eat. So there's a tremendous desire to eat when you finally eat after the fast. Whereas if you don't fast, you can have a more neutral relationship with food, that the food doesn't trap you. You eat in order to be healthy and in order to do what has to be done. You don't necessarily, you're not subject to the food. And so this concept of prishut is a somewhat ambiguous concept, given also the sort of the more general distinction that is drawn between Jewish mystics and Lahavdil Christian mystics, where you have the idea of monks and nuns, and in Judaism this for the most part does not exist. So in general Judaism is on the side of somehow utilizing the things of this world. However, that can be, as the sages put it, belo lev velev, without one's heart being totally in it. That the person is involved with the world, but in a spiritual way. So that's where we have the ambiguous concept of prishut, of abstinence, although I'm not quite happy with any real English translation of the word prishut. Of course, the prushim were the ancestors. They were the sages. They were the figures who were the sages of the Mishnah. In temple times, v'chatav haMidrash Shmuel. Now Midrash Shmuel writes, which is a commentary, the Perusho hu mile de Chasiduto, and his Perush is Mile de Chasiduta, words of Chasidism, as it were, words of spirituality. Lefichach huva b'mesechet avot shehi mile de Chasiduta, and therefore it's brought in Pirkei Avot, which is itself words of spirituality. The whole idea that Pirkei Avot are, in some sense, see, Pirkei Avot for the most part is not talking about halakha. It's something meta-halachic. It's beyond halachic. And so that's basically the Hasidic domain. It's that extra Hasidic domain, which, quote-unquote, Hasidic, which is the extra dimension. Upilish mile de Chasiduta, the idea of words of Hasidus, in other words, some kind of extra spirituality. Halpisha Masha Mavua b'mekomacher is, as explained elsewhere, the malata chasid hu lemaila mimalata tzadik. The word chasid, in fact, is higher than the concept tzadik. So, the word chasid today, this is one of the arguments in the study of the Hasidic movement. The word Hasid today is used to mean follower, a follower of a Rebbe. He is a Hasid, he is a Vizhnitz Hasid, he is a Lubavitch Hasid. He is a follower of this Rebbe, a follower of that Rebbe. And originally the word Hasid didn't mean anything like that. The word Hasid was a very exalted term expressing a very high level of spirituality. And in this discourse, that word chassid is used more in its original term, not as a member of the Hasidic movement. So in its original sense, when you have a list of different levels, chassid is actually higher than tzaddik. Va'inyan hu, the subject is as follows. Dehine bechlalut yesh gimu bechinat b'Yisrael. There are generally three aspects of the Jew, as described in Tanya. Rasha'im, Beinanim, B'tzadikim. The Rasha, the Beinani, the intermediate person, and the Tzadik, the righteous person. Now in Tanya it gives a whole explanation of this in Tanya's analysis. But in fact in the Talmud it uses these terms in a more simple way. The Talmudic way of looking at it is the Rasha'im are mostly bad, the Beinanim are equal bad and good, and the tzaddikim are more good than bad. And in terms of that, chassid is a completely higher level. Aval yesh od ma'ala gdola mi'ma'alat ha-tzaddikim, but there's a much higher level than that of tzaddikim, v'hu ma'alat, hi ma'alat ha-chassid, that's the level of chassid. V'hine k'tiv, now it's written. So there are those three qualities. We're looking at it more in the Talmudic way. Now it's written. Gamet ha'olam natam belibam. Beautiful verse. The world is put, God puts the world in their hearts. That means the identification of the microcosm and the macrocosm. Umizem muvan, and from this we understand that kashem sheyesh shlosha da'agot elu ba'adam, just as there are these three levels in the person, ba'avodat ha'adam, in the service of the person, Yeshno gamkein ba'olam, you also have the same thing in the world. Shahari chayav adam lomar bishvili nivra olam. A person has the duty to say, for my sake the world was created. Bucholam lo nivru elu l'shamsheni. All of the world, everything, was only created to serve me. In other words, a person has this... whether as an individual or as humanity as a whole, the whole point is the service of human beings. Human beings are the ones who have free will. Everything else, the flowers, the crystals, the planets, the oceans, the animals, they all function the way that Hashem programmed them to function. We're the ones who have a Yetzer Tov and a Yetzer Ra, or some form of decision-making, or Bechira. And so everything which is around us, and everything around us in life, we see as the challenge to us, how are we going to behave? And so that in that sense, every single thing is created for us. So if something goes wrong, God forbid, or it's good things, it is all the question which is addressed to each of us. Ayeka, where are you? Like God said to Adam. And Rabbi Shneur Zalman says, that's the question really addressed to every human being. Where are you? Who are you? He explained this to a warder in the prison. When Rabbi Shneur Zalman was put in prison by the opponents of Hasidism, who told the Tsar that Rabbi Shneur Zalman was a traitor to Russia because he was sending money to the Turks, i.e. to support the Jews in the land of Israel, then ruled by Turkey. So the Tsar put him in prison, and one of the warders asked Rabbi Shneur Zalman, he was a religious man, you know, they were, and he knew this was a rabbi, and he asked him, why did God say to Adam, where are you, in the Garden of Eden, after Adam ate from the tree of knowledge? So Rabbi Shneur Zalman said, well, God addresses this to every person. He says, where are you? And then he said it in such a way that the warder understood it as referring to him himself. So the whole of existence really revolves around the person in our relationship to God. All is for the sake of the service of the person. V'imkein, and therefore, if that's the case, that everything in existence really relates to our avodat Hashem, our service of God, gam bo'olam yesh kama chilukei madregot. Therefore, also in the world, there are different levels, al derech ha-chilukim sheba avodat ha-adam, corresponding to the differences in the service of the person. V'hachiluk. Now this is a very beautiful thing, which draws a parallel between the different levels of spiritual attainment of the person and the pattern of the four worlds which the Kabbalists speak about: Atzilut, Bria, Yitzira, Asiya, emanation, creation, formation, and action. V'hachiluk bein rashaim beininim v'tzadikim kamo shu be'olamot. The difference between the rashaim, the people who are mostly bad, and the beininim, the people who are in the middle, and the tzadikim, the people who are more good than bad, as it is in the world, who the translating that into the Kabbalistic world, who achiluk bein ashlosha olamot, asiya yitzira ubriya, action, formation, and creation. So let's just have these asiya, Yetzira, Bria. So at this moment we're just talking about those three worlds: action, formation, and creation. So what do we have here? Sheyeshno chiluk gadol beinayim. There's a big difference between them. Vahainu dagam sholam bichlal. Even though world, in general, any kind of world, humiloshon ha'alem vehestem, comes from the word helem, meaning concealment. So ha'olam and helem have the same letters, if you write them in this way without the vav. So the world means concealment. The very definition of world is that it's a concealment of God, because otherwise you have at the top of the picture, you have Ein Sof Baruch Hu. You have the infinite. So the infinite is beyond world, and the infinite is ultimate, or even Or Ein Sof, the radiance of the Ein Sof. It's beyond any kind of concealment. Once you have a world, in some way it is a concealment of godliness. So that's Olam Lishon Helem, the world meaning concealment. Mekom makom yesh kama chilukei madregot. Nonetheless, it's not just one level. There are several different levels, many. In the downchaining of the world, the olam asiya, because the world of action, rubora, is mostly bad, as it says in Pri Eitz Chaim, which is a Kabbalistic book, and there it tells us that this physical world is mostly bad, v'huva b'Tanya, as quoted in Tanya as well. So if you don't have access to a Pri Eitz Chaim, you could look at the newspaper, but which might indicate the same thing. Depends which newspaper you read. I was looking in some health, a book on health, you know, like health guidance, you know, diet and so on. He advised people not to look at the news, because the news is very upsetting to me. So he advised me, you know, drink less coffee and don't look at the news.
Just bought a coffee machine.
Okay, nuts goes on. Use it healthy.
Fresh coffee is supposed to be better than instant.
Sorry?
Ah. Fresh coffee is supposed to be better than instant.
Oh, at least.
Sorry,
if I thought
so.
Le fachot.
So it says in Tanya, using this idea, Sha'olam hazeh umalei klipot, this world is full of forces of negativity, klipot, shells, which
klipot
hide...
Klipot is forces of negativity?
Well, klipot literally means shell.
I know.
And the shell hides the spirituality. So in terms of the Kabbalistic way of looking at the world, the klipot, as particularly as explained by the Arizal, by Rabbi Yitzchak Luria, the klipot are the result of shvirat hakelim, the breaking of the vessels. And the breaking of the vessels means that there are forces in the world which are forces of concealment of godliness. And those are, so to speak, shivrei kelim, the broken bits of vessel, which were sfirot, chesed, gvura, tiferet, but now have become a kind of concealing power, And you know, in terms of analyzing what is the role of evil in the world, right? So so it's a discussion among Kabbalists, and it's a theme in Kabbalistic thought. You know, what is the origin? I mean, it's an obvious problem, because if God is infinitely good, why should there be any evil in the world at all, given that God is all-powerful and all-knowing? So it's a philosophical question which preoccupies philosophers, and it's also a Kabbalistic question. And one of the ways the Kabbalah explains and presents the problem of evil is that due to the process called the breaking of the vessels, which was right at the beginning, before physical creation, when the Sfirot were being formed as a stage before the creation of the world, then there was an intensity of divine radiance and a weakness of the vessels of the Sfirot. And the result was Shvirat HaKelim, breaking of the vessels. Which some of my psychotherapist friends see as kind of a nervous breakdown or psychosis on a cosmic level. And this breakdown in existence leads to wayward forces called Klipot, which then exist in the lives of people. And they have a spiritual energy in them, which is the divine spark, Shemachaya Otam, which gives them life. And that gives them their power. And the task of man is to elevate the Klipot. Is to resist the temptation of the Klipa, or to use the Klipa in a positive way in some form. And there are different levels of Klipa. There is the level of Klipa which cannot be dealt with directly, and that's the realm of things which the Torah forbids us to do, or to eat, or to be involved with, because that's the area that we can't directly elevate that Klipa. The way we elevate the spark of that Klipa is by not doing that action, by keeping away from it. Whereas there's another form of Klipa that we can be directly involved in, and that's called Klipat Nogad. That's a kind of a middle level of Klipa. And that is the kosher dimension of the world. And so we can utilize
kosher,
what's permitted, what's fit. And so the kosher food, in itself, it's also Klipa, because it conceals godliness, the food in itself. But eating kosher food, food which is permitted, we're able to use the energy in a positive and spiritual way and elevate the life force which is in that food, which is in that domain of existence. And so with all the physical things around us, we're able, if they are permitted, money which is not stolen, so it's kosher, it's klipa, it's not godliness, and it even hides godliness. But we can still utilize it in a positive way and elevate. So, and elevate the life force which is within it. So, in this world, it's full of klipot of one kind or another, v'harashoim govrim bo, and unfortunately wicked people who have more bad than good, are very powerful in this world. V'hainu, and this means, lo chas v'shalom be'eses sfirot sheba'asiyah. It doesn't mean the actual sfirot of asiyah. Eila hakavana hi lo'olam asiyah, but to the world of asiyah, halavushim dilei, the garments of asiyah. So around asiyah, in some sense, there is a kind of a world which emerges from it, and the world which emerges from it is our world. That's where we live. And so there's a spiritual inwardness, which is the Sfirot of Asiyah, and that's the real spiritual dimension of life which you know, a person might relate to through perception of nature and the spirituality of nature and so on. That's the Sfirot of Asiyah, in some conceptual way. the radiance of God which fills the world. But the actual world itself, as we see it, has a lot of negativity in it, certainly in its human, dimension. Ubiyitzirah, now, so in Asiyah we have the case that it's mostly bad. Yitzirah, when we rise to the level of Yitzirah, it's half and half. V'gam sha'aram u'rab batov, and the bad is actually mixed with good. Omnam bo'olam ha'briyah, but in the world of creation, she'keneged ha'tzadik, which corresponds to tzadik, rubo tov, mostly it's good. V'od she'gam mi'ut ha'ra einem u'rab imatov, and also the little bit of bad that is there is not mixed with the good. U'kenireh gam b'muchash, as we can see visibly, demi she'yesh bo dakut, someone who has edelkeit, subtlety. He's a refined person in a positive sense. Edelkeit is a very important Hasidic concept, or Jewish concept, traditional Jewish concept. It's interesting that it doesn't translate into ordinary Lashon HaKodesh. So, another way of putting it, nobility. Edelkeit really means nobility. The person who has this real
refinement,
yeah.
Nobility,
well, has refinement. Every word that we use expressing something good of this kind, because of certain social forces, also has a negative dimension to it at the same time. You know, so the nobleman, we think of the negative aspects of noble people. Refined people also implies some kind of negative, la-di-da.
Yeah, I think refined. The la-di-da is part of nobility rather than the refined.
Uh-huh. All right, it's the subtlety of words. But there is this concept of edelkeit, of a... A deeply pure person. I think that could be a way of explaining edelkeit. Eino sovel davara b'tivo, cannot bear something bad. I knew a person, or I know a person, who when she was a young girl, she a teenager, so she... she had to stay with a family who began they began talking about, in a very negative way, about other people, like at the Shabbat table or something. And the girl burst into tears. It was very, she couldn't bear this idea of people talking in this negative way, which she'd been taught is the wrong way to talk, and she felt that this was she felt personally upset by it. So or if you imagine someone who someone is in some kind of organization, and the organization is trying to do something, like a company, and the company is trying to do something which that person feels is immoral or is not right, so he resigns from the board. He can't have anything to do with it. He doesn't want to have anything to do with that whole thing. Ubefran davashu hura al pi Torah. Now it's interesting, he puts these in two concepts, especially something bad according to the Torah. You could have something bad which is not actually bad according to the Torah, but the person still feels it's wrong. These two lines could figure if someone was writing an analysis of conscience, morality, and Torah law, conscience and halacha, because here it seems to express two different dimensions, which is actually discussed by the Talmud. The Talmud presents the concept of din Torah and din shamayim. There's the law of the Torah, and a more exacting, a more intense level of spiritual morality, which is called the law of heaven. So there is a case of a rabbi who was a very exalted rabbi, and Elijah the prophet, Eliyahu Navi, would appear to him every night and they would study together. Now this rabbi was the Av Bet Din of a city. He was the head of a city, the rabbi, the chief rabbi of a city. And there came, and it was in Roman times, and there was a certain problem that a man who was wanted by the Romans came and hid in the city. And the Romans told the rabbi, we understand there's this man hiding in your city. We want him, otherwise we're going to attack the city and put everyone to death. Or something like that. So, according to the Torah, if the Romans say, or the enemy says, we want one of you, and if you don't give one of you, we'll put you all to death. Or with women, it could be. We want one woman. Give one woman. Otherwise, we'll rape every woman in the city. One is not allowed to take one person and deliver them to the enemy in that way. You can't make a korban out of one person. As the Talmud puts it, who says that their blood is redder than yours? You know, you got no right to do that. But according to the strict Torah, if they say so and so, that man, you know, that, giving his name, we want him, then that's a different situation. And you're allowed to give him over to the enemy in order to save the city. Especially if he's done something wrong that according to the Torah is also considered something wrong. It's not comfortable, obviously. Anyway, so the rabbi persuaded the man to give himself up to the Romans, and he did. And that saved the city.
So in fact, halachically, in the ghettos, they weren't allowed to hand over the quota.
Terrible problem. Everything in the ghetto works the other way around as well. If you manage to get free from the, you know, like they had white cards or something, which enabled people to get out of the ghetto, were you allowed to take a white card? Because that would mean someone else wouldn't get out. I mean, there were halachic problems on every level. Certainly the quota, the whole activity, you know. It's very, very painful there. Anyway. Now, so Elijah the prophet stopped appearing to this rabbi. So the rabbi was very upset, and he went through some process of fasting, 40 fasts, as it were, to force Elijah to come to him. And then Elijah did come at the end of the 40 fast. You could try it. And he said, why don't you come anymore? He said, I should come to a person who's a moser, who gives over people to the government in a heedless way. He says, what do you mean? It's permitted by the Torah. The Mishnah permits it. So Elijah responds, but not Mishnat Chasidim, not the spiritual Mishnah. So that's an example of Din Torah and Din Shamayim. The regular operation of Torah and the spiritual level, which is a higher level. So you have here a hint to that as well. Ubifrat hafi ma shekatuv lo yu'una letzadik kol avon, and especially kol aven, especially according to what it's written that nothing bad happens to a tzadik. So at the level of Briyah, that's the level of a tzaddik where there is no negativity. So in Yetzirah, Shumechtza Mechetze, Yetzirah, the world of formation, which is half and half, that's like the Beinoni. And the world of Briyah, of creation, which is mostly good, and also it's not the who can neged the tzaddikim, that corresponds to the tzaddikim. Now, then it mentions the tzaddik of Tanya, and it veers away from that. V'agam shebetanya ita, even though in Tanya it says tzaddik she'ena gamur, And even more so, Tzadik Gamor Ein Bo Ra, he has no bad at all. Mikol Makom, nonetheless.
Well, what's this? Aleph Ayin Aleph.
Alachat Kama V'Kama.
Alachat Kama V'Kama.
That appears in the Haggadah. Alachat Kama V'Kama. Yeah, what after Dayenu. So in other words, the depiction of a tzaddik that Tanya has is of a person who has no bad, where the bad is being transformed into good. Mikol makom, nonetheless, there's the Talmudic concept. Harayeshno pinat tzaddik. There's the concept of a tzaddik should tzaddik bedino, the tzaddik who is successful in the judgment. Hanikra tzaddik b'shem ha'mushal, who is called tzaddik in a kind of borrowed way, ve'etzlo rak rubotov, and in him mostly he's good, but there is a bit of bad. So in other words, we're talking here, when we use the word tzaddik, it's the Talmudic tzaddik. So let's just put these words. So we have the Rasha at the level of action, the Beinoni, the intermediate person, at the level of formation, and the Tzaddik at the level of creation, which is higher up. And then, Avul Chas, Omnam Chasid, but the concept Chasid, Hu Keneged Olam Atzilut. That relates to the world of Atzilut, which is a much higher level. That's the world of emanation. That's the highest of the four worlds, where there is no bad at all. And that is the level which is here being called Chassid. Okay, Adur Mash Mevar Rabbeinu Azaken, as is known what Rabbi Shneur Zalman wrote in a piece of Bektav Yad Kodesho in his own sacred handwriting, Admo Nishma Seden, which in his name is printed in the book Torah, or Sha'atzilut Hu Sof Alomot Ha'Ein Sof. Atzilut is the end of the worlds of Ein Sof. So really, Atzilut is a kind of an extension of this upper level of Ein Sof. And really, there's a big difference between Atzilut and Bria. And lower than that begin the created worlds. Now what it's writing about in Torah, this little fragment, which is actually in the handwriting of Rabbi Shneur Zalman, which the editor, the Tzemach Tzedek, had when he was writing Torah, we're on page 119, that means that this is the two kruvim in the ark, in the Holy of Holies, in the temple, there were two kruvim, two cherubs on the golden ark, two golden cherubs facing each other. Kruv echad mikatzim ezeh, hu inyan zeh ampin. One cherub on one side of the ark represents zeh ampin, which is Sof Olamot Ein Sof. That is the Sfirot of Atzilut, the end of the worlds of Ein Sof. Ukruv echad mikatzim ezeh, and then on the other side, he Sfirat HaMalchut, that is the Sfirah Malchut of Ein Sof as well, of Atzilut, and Shimimene Hitavut Olamot Biyah, from which coming to existence the worlds, Bria, Yetzira, Asiya, creation, formation, action, Veragleha Yordot. What's the last word?
Chul.
No. Well, it says Chuli, which means etc. But what is it?
Mata? Short. No.
Hmm?
Mata? No.
No, Mavet. It's a pasuk. Veragleha Yordot Mavet. Her feet go down to death. In other words, that from Malchut of Atzilut, you have the flow. So if we just look at within the world of Atzilut, you have the line of force which is these the svirot, let's call them the general svirot of Atzilut, and then we have Malchut. Then we have the quality of Malchut, and that Malchut is the point which, that's the kingship of Atzilut, and from there goes down all these different levels to the very lowest level ultimately. So we've got the spiritual levels of the spiritual worlds of the Kabbalah, then right down into our world. This red line over here represents the negativity of our world, and that begins at Malchut, and that's the concept of the exile of Malchut. The exile of the Shekhinah is the way in which the life force of Malchut is dragged down into situations which are negative situations. But at the higher level within Atzilut, there we have Sfirot, which really an extension of Ein Sof. That's the way in which Rav Eshner Zalman is presenting that. Okay, so here, just to recap, we have the idea of different levels of the person. What the Rebbe is trying to explain in this, he's explaining, we're trying to understand in this discourse, is... And the problem there, in a sense, is that he quotes a whole lot of things at the beginning that really, to understand it properly, we would have to begin right at the beginning and learn all those different discourses from the Kutei Torah, from 1919, from etc., etc. So in order to understand. But basically, he's discussing the concept of nedarim, of vows, where a vow means a person takes something permitted and says, I'm not going to do that, I'm not going to eat tomatoes. He vows he's not going to eat tomatoes. And so in order to explore this concept, we come to the idea of the different levels of person. Rasha, mostly bad. Beinoni, equally good and bad. Tzadik, which is mostly good. And this is the Talmudic analysis, not that of Tanya. Because in Tanya, although the Beinoni has within him forces of evil, he never allows those forces to direct his activities. So the Beinoni is actually, in his actions, he's perfect. Only in the inner energy which is inside him is there possibly very great negativity, but he controls it through a sense of humor. Perhaps. With humor you can deal with it. And then we have tzaddik, which again is the tzaddik of the Talmud, not the tzaddik of the Tanya, which is the person where there is more good than bad. And then higher is the level of chassid, which we could say is like the tzaddik of Tanya. The chassid is like a higher level, a more spiritual level.
No bad.
Okay, and then the Rebbe has put the parallel between these different levels of service of God to different levels of existence, using the concept that inside each person, the microcosm, is the whole macrocosm. So therefore, if these are four possible levels of service of the divine, that relates to the four worlds of the Kabbalah, yeah?
How did they link the Nedarim with the three types of people? By saying that the Hasid is an extra one and then there are three others below it?
I think the link's going to come here. I don't think he's set up the link.
Mm-hmm.
He said in order to understand this, he posed the question about the Nedarim.
Mm-hmm. Then he starts talking
he's
about
introduced
this, and then at the end he will join the Nedarim with this. Tzaddik does not need. Okay.
Yeah, it's interesting. This is, you see, there's the concept of Midrash. Midrash starts with a pasuk from the Parshat HaShavua, from the Seder of the Week. And it might sometimes pose a question, or it just then quotes a far pasuk, a pasuk somewhere else in Tanakh, usually from Ketuvim, from Iyov, from the book of Job, from Mishlei, from Proverbs. And through exploring that verse, which is in Proverbs or in the book of Job, which is basically a kind of chokhmah, wisdom, these are called the Sifchut Chokhmah, the wisdom literature. From that, it comes back to our pasuk. So it's like a circular journey where it reaches into some body of wisdom and then comes back to the verse that we're actually looking at here. So in the same way, in this Hasidic discourse, it's in many ways the same structure.
It's apparently also a Greek way of doing things.
Okay. That's interesting.
Because I was just reading a book by someone called Daniel Mendelssohn.
Right.
A book called Lost.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about how he was attracted to Greek philosophy, only to later in his life come to Yadut and find that it's the same. He didn't like Yadut at the beginning because of the lack of this going of bringing different parts. And later on, he found that it does, it can do that as well.
Interesting. Yes. Maybe Yadut has whatever you're looking for if you know where to look.
No, everything is whatever you're looking for if you know where to look.
Interesting. Okay. That's,
he talks about this concept of bringing things from far away and then at the end joining. And his book is has got writing in normal font, and then it has italic pages.
Well, I'll make a note of that. Okay, so I'll make a note after this one. Lost.
It's Lost, the search for 6 out of 6 million. It's easy to remember.
And what are the six?
His family.
His family.
Yeah.
Very nice. He has 4 children.
No, it's the...
Oh, his parents? him and his wife and teacher.
The brother of his grandfather that had a wife and 4 children.
Oh, I see. He's looking for 6 of his family in the past. Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. But now we come back, after having introduced this Torah, as it were, this Chochmah, this wisdom, from this body, this infinite body of Kabbalistic and spiritual wisdom, we're now coming back to the subject of the Parshat HaShavua, you know, giving the drasha. V'hine al pi haniske la'el, through that which we have mentioned above, yuvan will be understood, ma sheyeshno inyan nedarim. We can understand the idea of vows. V'lo dayecha ma she'ascha Torah, isn't it enough for you what the Torah forbade you? Why do you have to make vows and forbid tamales as well? Mishum, my grandfather told me, when tamales came to his village in Poland, they wouldn't eat them.
You're still thinking about them.
Why?
I'm not sure if it was because they were told that the Hebrew name for them is Agvaniot, which sounds a rather immodest thing. So, but they didn't have the tradition of eating them, and so they've suddenly come along and they didn't know what they were. Mishum sheba'olam kazeh sheyesh bo gam metziyut shel ra, because a world like ours, in which there is also the existence of evil. You see, the very fact that one is in a world where evil exists, that's a very, very painful thing. It doesn't matter that a person doesn't do evil. The fact that there is evil, it's an extremely uncomfortable thing. In this world, in such a world, צריך לעניין הפרישות. In this world, there needs to be the concept of פרישות. Now, the point is, פרישות, it says in Pirkei Avot, that נדרים, vows, prohibitive vows, which prevent us from doing various things which otherwise would be committed, they are like a fence or a border to Prishut. And Prishut is usually translated asceticism, self-denial, self-restraint. But it's maybe to be not to be caught by the desires of the world. There are aspects of the world that we need.
It is to be caught, but it's to remove yourself from the desire.
Well, it's to stop being caught.
It's to remove yourself, to defrosh, is to separate from something. So you are caught. I mean, if it doesn't attract you, then there is no point in saying there's no value in this abstinence. I think the Prishut is lifrosh from something.
All right. I mean, it's an interesting thing. If there was no negative energy, you could say, then you wouldn't need the Prishut. So, in fact, the person is unlikely to vow not to have tomatoes, because tomatoes don't have any real dangerous quality in them. But he might he might vow from some, perhaps. You know.
Well, it depends on what type of...
tomato. So, in other words, there has to be... the ability to withdraw, because the world has got negativity in it, we need the ability to withdraw
from this negativity.
Yeah, and to be able to close up. Otzem einav mirot bara. He closes his eyes rather than see something negative. So there's a possibility of something negative, so he closes his eyes. Now this could be taken to extreme. The Satmar Rebbe, Zecharin Lebracha, Rabbi Yol Teitelbaum, visited England. I think it was in the 50s or the 60s. And walking through the streets, he found this. He refused to walk, to have his eyes open while he walked through the street in Stamford Hill. In 1950. And so two Hasidim had to lead him by the hands while he was walking through. Okay, this seems to worry Laddie. you know, so there's that on various dimensions of life, you know, and the point is that you see, we can pretend that nothing matters and that we're not trapped by anything or not attracted by anything. And that's one of the ways that people get into different kinds of trouble, is by the self-deception that they have no problem and it doesn't matter and they're grown up. So it's an awareness of the possibilities of negativity and keeping away, you know, not going near the edge. It's another variety of not going near the edge. But how do we manage to achieve this? V'hakoach lezeu me'olam atzilut. The power for this prishut, in the best sense, in the most balanced sense, comes from the world of atzilut, the world of emanation, she'en bo ra klal, which has got no bad in it at all. Inyan milei dechasiduta. The words of Chasidut, which is what Pirkei Avot is, which talks about this, Bechinat Chasid, the quality of Chasid. And Chasid here means the level without bad. Vezeh gam adiyuk v'loshon mile de Chasidut. That's also the meaning of the words of Chasidut. The inyan Chasidut nishah lo rak v'atzilut. The concept of Chasidut, the concept of this kind of spirituality, doesn't remain only on this exalted level of Atzilut, the world of emanation. Shiya Chasid bifnei atzmo, that he should be a Chasid for himself with no one else in the world at all. He's on a desert island, there he's a Chasid. Eile sheba'olam hamili, but in the world of words, the world of reality, Ba'olam melashon helem behester, in the world which is, as the word world means, concealment. In other words, in a very negative world, like our physical world here. Sham yunshach inyan ha'prishut. There should be spread the concept of prishut, of this spiritual relationship with life. Inyan ha'chassidut, which is chassidut. So, chassidut in this sense is being taken as the person who is not who has cut some sort of link. You see, you say that if he's not caught by it, he wouldn't have to be he wouldn't have to resist it, which is a good point. But you know, kol nidre, on Yom Kippur night we say kol nidre, all vows, v'esarei, and we are cutting the bonds, we're cancelling, we're annulling all vows. And one of the ways this is explained, it's a very, it's extremely intriguing prayer, but one of the ways it's explained is that we make contrary vows. We make vows to the world. I must have this, and I must have that. These are some of the most destructive forces in people's lives, that they feel they must have this thing or that thing. And making a vow is, as it were, the Torah concept of a vow is breaking, is getting rid of that, or as we have it on Kol Nidre, which is the opposite, annulling the vow. Is annulling the vows we've made to the physical world. And we now cancel all those vows and we're free. We're free from that physical realm with all its demands. Or apparent demands. Now, so all this is the concept of a vow, that the person makes a vow in order, as it were, to reach a level of chassid in a world which is very negative. And he wants to, or she wants to, avoid the pain of the presence of evil by retreating or reaching for a higher level, which is beyond evil. Om nom. But now we come to another concept. Yesh no gam kenin in heter nedarim. We also have the idea of the permitting of vows. So the person who's made a vow, he can come shuhu al yedei achacham va'av, the father. In the Pasuk, in the Psukim, we have the idea that the father of the girl, hearing her make a vow, he can annul it. Mm-hmm. Or for that matter, her husband. Yeah. But there's an extra concept which is added in the Talmud, which is that the Chacham, the rabbi, can also annul the vow. Va'inyan hu, and the subject is as follows, Dobolam atzilut mitzad atzmo, in the world of atzilut in itself, Shalamayla mimili de chasiduta, which is higher than the level of than the words of chassidut. You see the words of chassidut, that's like the world which comes down, but then that's the words. But then we have the world of atzilut in itself. Sham ein makom lemitziut shel ra. There's no room at all for the concept of bad. Velechein ein sham mitziut shel nedarim usyagim. And therefore, this fits with what you're saying, Eli. Because there is no sense of bad whatsoever, you don't need any kind of nedarim. Nothing is attracting the person. If the person is being attracted by something which is very negative, you can say, I vow, I'm never going to go near this place where there's this attractive thing there. But, tomatoes. But, if he's not attracted, there's nothing which has this negative nature. You're in such a realm of such intense spirituality that there isn't anything bad. You don't need any nedarim. From there comes the heter nedarim, by reaching to a yet higher level. Ukumo Aaron, shuisha chesed be'etzem. Like Aaron, who represents a person of total kindness. V'lachin al-pi Torah, shehi Torah chesed. Therefore, according to Torah, which is a Torah of kindness, Efshal liyod hatarat nedarim, there can be the permission of vows. V'ahaynu b'chinat or Abba. This is the radiance of Chochmah. Abba means here Chochmah, father, but Chochmah. The Abba ilam mekananah ba'atzilut. The upper chokhmah, the upper wisdom, nests in Atzilut, as it says in the Zohar and in Eitz Chaim of the Arizal. It says in the footnote. The machmat ze yeshno birur, velo rak prishut. At this level, there is transformation. Birur literally means sifting, but what it means in this sense, if you sift the spark of radiance, spark of sanctity in the klipa, and you remove this spark of sanctity, then the klipa dissolves as a force of evil, and the klipa quality disappears. It's complete transformation. Velo rak prishut, not just keeping away from something negative. The negative thing is transformed into something positive. Dinyana prishut hu tchiya, as you said. The idea of prishut, of asceticism, is pushing away the attractive things that surround the person. Masha'en kein ha-chacham ba'av, whereas the wise person, the sage, the Aaron, or the father, shehula, here taken in a sort of spiritual sense, shehula maile gam min dodeh b'chai ha-melech, which is higher even than the one who vows by the life of the king. Now, the one who vows by the life of the king, that's a reference to the Svirab Bina. The idea that the vows come from the Svirab Bina, and at that level, the king means the Svirot of Hatzilut. So you have the Svirot, you have the concept of vows as they emanate from Bina, of understanding, but Chochmah, wisdom, is a higher level. And that higher level, Mashi Yisrael Nikraim B'nai Melachim, the fact that Jewish people are called the children of kings, or Melachim, or they're called kings themselves, K'di'ita B'Aktamat Tikkun Ezor, as it says in the introduction to the Tikkun Ezor, they, at their level of king, of Chochmah, which is higher than Binah, wisdom, which is higher than understanding, this is two levels in the Sfirot of Atzilut, right? So, they matirim et haneder, they cancel, they annul the vow, ki b'yecholtam levare gam inyanim elu, because they are able to sift out also these things. Now that's an amazing idea, that they are able to sift out these things, ad shenaasim b'ne'ureha, I think it should be k'ne'ureha, Beit Avia, like a girl in her father's house. Now that's really a quote from the Psukim about the girl in her father's house who makes a vow, but it's here an expression of purity. They are even able to annul the vows of the past. They sift and transform the past. Now, I think that between the lines over here, it's talking about the relationship between the Rebbe and Chassid, and the ability of the past of the Chassid to be transformed and redeemed through contact and relationship with the Rebbe. Now this, the whole interesting idea, what is the relationship of Rebbe and Chassid? It's actually written about very little in Chabad Chassidism, because Chabad Chassidism tends to throw the onus, the empowerment and the responsibility on the Chassid. But there are other Chassidic books from the time of Rabbi Shneur Zalman, like Noam Elimelech, by Rabbi Elimelech of Lizhensk, who was a friend of Rabbi Shneur Zalman. And that book has in it a whole Torah of the relationship between Chassid and Rebbe, and a spiritual interrelationship. And so
in this you're talking about Chassid in the modern meaning.
Yes, yeah, yeah, quite right. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, but I think that these references to Chacham, Mati, and Neder, I mean, today people don't make vows. The Orthodox style of today is that if you say, I'll meet you 2 o'clock tomorrow, bli neder, without a vow. People are very concerned not to make vows. And there are terrible problems, God forbid, if someone has to be in a court case and they have to, swear. So they affirm. The Orthodox people don't want to swear, they affirm. So Nedarim seemed to be in a major problem in the time of the Mishnah. People were continuously making vows in anger or in excitement, or, you know, I vow I will never step into that person's house. You know, it was a kind of a continuous kind of issue that was being addressed to the rabbis at the time to deal with. Someone has vowed this and this, and it's now a problematic issue. So now we're not talking about. I mean, we might have Matir Neder today in a sense of someone was always had the minhag to do a certain thing, and now he wants to stop that minhag. He might discuss this with the rabbi and whether he has to be Matir Neder.
How do you make a vow?
It's just a person saying something. He doesn't need anything else. The person says, I vow.
Rule or
there are. It's format. Full of rules. What constitutes a vow? You know, the rabbi might say, "What exactly did you say?" But so basically, if the person says he vows not to do a certain,
you don't say, "I'm not going to see you again." Is this a vow or not?
Well, it could be. You know, if the person vows, you know, I mean, there are a whole lot of different ways of expressing the vow, which the Mishnah and Talmud in the Darim talks about. Mm-hmm. They might say, this meat in this house is like the meat of an offering in the temple for me. Now, meat in the offering in the temple I can't eat, so therefore it's like saying that it's forbidden to me. So there are all kinds of imaginative ways of presenting forbiddenness. That woman, she's like my mother to me. I'm never going to marry her. And then they turn out to be the only two people on the desert island. Yeah. Well, let's hope there's a rabbi there as well.
Or if he is a rabbi himself.
What?
If he's a rabbi himself.
A rabbi himself?
Yeah.
Oh, whether one can permit one's own vow, I'm not sure. That's not to me. Ein chavush matir tatzmo. The person who's tied up can't untie himself. He, unlike Houdini, he has.
He does.
Yeah. V'yesh lomar, and one can suggest shachiluk bein nedarim la'tarat nedarim. The difference in making vows and the permitting of vows. Who al derech shtei ha'malot is like the two levels sheyeshlam b'kodeshim, achilat kohanim v'achilat mizbeach. Okay, this moves into a whole other maima, another discourse. U'kmevur b'sefer ha'mitzvot la'tzemach tzedek u'b'chama mekomot, which is explained in a certain book of the third Lubavitcher Rebbe and in various places. The yesh l'mala b'achilat mizbeach k'muvan. So you have the idea of putting the offering on the altar like a burnt offering, which is like nedarim. But then there's another aspect of the offering which is eaten by the kohanim and is not burnt on the altar. In some sense that is higher, the Tzemach Tzedek says over there, which is like the permitting of the vows. Okay, so in other words, we've got Atzilut in itself, the level which is beyond vows, which is the level of the permitting of vows, which is like the level of wisdom of the level wisdom in the world of Atzilut, which is higher than understanding, and understanding is the level of vows. So we have there this interplay between Atzilut in relation to the other worlds, and within Atzilut, the higher level of wisdom as opposed to understanding, or Atzilut in itself as opposed to that which comes from Atzilut, which is the realm where they're about. Now we're going to talk about another concept that was mentioned at the beginning, the fact that Moshe says Zeh HaDavah, this is the thing. From here we can understand also what it says, this is the thing. Zeh Moreal Olam Atzilut. Zeh indicates the world of Atzilut, Kiyadua, as is known, Mashamru Azal Al Pasuk. Zeh, they said about this Pasuk, in Sifrei, which is the Midrash, and also Rashi in this place. Duchol HaNeviyim Nitnabu Becho. All the other prophets, they gave prophecies with Ko Ama Hashem. This is what God said. Moshe nitnabe bezeh. Moshe, he prophesied with the word zeh. V'pchinat ko, the word ko hu olamot bia. That's bria, yitzira, asiya. Those are the three lower worlds. That's ko. Thus says God. V'pchinat zeh hu olam atzilut. But the word zeh is the world of atzilut. V'inyan hadava. And when it says this is the thing, this hu inyan hadibur. That's the words. The inyan hadandarim, because the concept of vows are kumo hakodesh, hektish. A vow is like sanctifying something. See, a person could say, this chair is hektish, which this chair is holy, which means the chair has to be given to the temple and the value of the chair will be used. They'll sell the chair and they'll use it for the money to look after the upkeep of the temple. So you can make anything hektish. Or if you said this lamb is hektish, then that could, then if the lamb is suitable to be used as an offering, it would be offered up. So a vow is like hektish, should be ikab dibur. It comes into process by speech. There's a discussion in the Talmud, or it gives various, Talmudic sources, or Talmudic style sources, about a discussion whether you can make something holy in this way just through thinking. It's a complex thing. You know, if you think, I decide to give a certain amount of money to this tzedakah, do you have to give the money to tzedakah? The tam adavah, in fact, in general, if we think of doing a good thing, and we resolve in our thoughts to do it, we should do it. But the real force of a vow or of sanctifying something is in speech. Now the reason why the idea of vows and the permitting of vows kashu in koach hadibur dafka is connected with the power of speech specifically mishum sheshorsho b'pnimut hanefesh. Is because speech is really based, the root of speech is in the inwardness of the soul, as explained in the fourth part of Tanya. Speech has a very profound source. So that's why Nedarim, their power comes from speech, and also Heter Nedarim, because the way the rabbi, the Av Bet Din, or whoever, the Chacham, the sage, permits the vow is by saying, Mutaloch, Mutaloch. He says certain words, and those permit the vow. V'zeu klalut inyan avodat ha'adam. This in general is the service of a human being or of a Jew. V'tchilat avodato, the beginning of his service, tzricha liyot b'inyan ha'adarim. You begin by abstinence. Kadesh atzmecha b'mutolach. Sanctifying oneself in that which is permitted, keeping away from gray areas. As is known, this idea of sanctifying oneself, it doesn't only mean to separate oneself. It also means holiness. The Adam nase kadosh. A person becomes more holy al yedei inyan hadarim. Through this concept of vows, through keeping away from all kinds of negative things, and even vowing to keep away, the person becomes a more spiritual person, genuinely, more holy. But v'achar kach, after this, he comes to a higher level. Hu poel et hatarat haneder. He comes to the level of permitting the vow. שמקורו מבחינת חוכמה דאצילות, which comes from the level of wisdom of אצילות, ועד שפועל עניין הקדושה, and he brings about the idea of holiness ad lekodesh hakadoshim, even to the most holy things, para aduma mechatat, these are the most exalted holy things, the red heifer which removes all impurity, the chatat kariyei rachmana, which and it's called the water mixed with the ashes of the red heifer is called chatat, it's called a sin offering, which is a higher level of offering, kodesh kadoshim, higher than an ordinary offering. Ubaze Yuval, and through this we can understand Gamasha Murazal, what the sages said. Heta Nadarim Porchin Ba'avir, Ve'ein Lahem El Mashi Yismochu. The permitting of vows flies in the air and has nothing to rely on, because it's hardly hinted at in the Pasuk at all. There are things like the laws of Shabbat, which are described as mountains suspended on a hair. The Torah does speak about Shabbat. Shabbat's one of the Ten Commandments. And a few times it mentions Shabbat. But on the basis of those few texts, there is a huge Masechta Shabbat full of 39 Av Melachot. And the next Masechta Eruvin is another dimension of the same thing. So it's an enormous amount of halachic wisdom and teaching, all based on a few words in the Torah. But the idea of permitting vows doesn't have any words in the Torah. the hint is, you should speak to the Roshei HaMatot. But there's no other tangible suggestion. The father or the husband permit the vow in the case of the woman. But from that, you have a whole general idea of permitting a vow. Now, so mishum she'inyan heten nedarim, because the concept of annulling a vow shorsho gavoh kol kach, comes from such a high source, shehu lemayle me'olamot legamre, it's completely beyond the worlds. The gam inyan nedarim mekoro me'olam atzilut, even the idea of vows is from the realm of atzilut, v'alachat kama v'kama atarat nedarim shehu mibchinat abba kanal. The permission of the vow, the annulment, comes from wisdom of Atzilut. Hari Mekora, its source, is Lamaila Mikol Seide Shtarshulut, is higher than the whole downchaining of worlds. The Zehu Inyan Ufarach Ba'avir. That's the idea of floating in the air. Ve'ein Laim El Mashi Yismochu. They've got nothing on which they can rely. Shuhu moved on Mikol Seide Shtarshulut. It's beyond the whole downchaining of the worlds. Ra'ad she'him uvdalim esedei shtashul afilu yoter, it is higher, more beyond the world of the downchaining of the worlds, even more me'otam inyanim shalem amru, those things of what they said, kaharachim atluyim b'sara, like mountains suspended by a hair, which is a reference to Hilchot Shabbat and various other things. V'yihi ratzon, and may it be the will of Hashem, through being involved in the service of sanctifying oneself in that which is permitted, we should come quickly to the time that the spirit of impurity will be removed from the world. Not only won't there be impurity, there even won't be a thing that can become tameh. And he gives the example of the schach of the sukkah, which the schach of the sukkah cannot even become tameh. Not only is it pure, you could have a thing which is pure, which can be brought into the temple because it's pure, but it couldn't be the schach of a sukkah, because the schach of the sukkah must be something that not only is pure, but cannot become impure, like a branch from a tree. Branch from a tree cannot become impure. But if it's made into a ladder, let's say, the ladder can be pure, but the ladder can't be put on top of the sukkah, because the ladder is an object that could become impure. V'od lifnezeh bizman ha-galut, and even before that, before the coming of Mashiach, in the time of exile, hare lechol b'nei Yisrael hayo'or b'moshvotam, before the Jews went out of Egypt, they had radiance in their dwellings. D'inyan ha'or, what's this radiance? U'gam kin davar she'inu mekabel tumah. It's something that does not accept purity. It doesn't become impure. K'd'itz b'gemara al pasuk, as it says in the Torah, on the verse, halo kod v'ray ke'esh, on my words like fire. The Do'or Eino Mekabel Tumah, that the fire does not receive impurity, or the fire, or the light. V'al-yedei avodah ba'ofen d'malim ha'kodesh, and through the service of going higher in holiness, b'vchinat nedarim, which is like vows, which take us to a higher level of holiness, of spirituality. V'achar kach, and then reaching a higher level, which is beyond vows. Chacham matir et haneder, the sage who permits the vow. V'achar kach la'aseh lo rak davar mutar. We've now got the situation that the thing you made a vow that you're not going to do, not only is it permitted, Eila davar kadosh, it becomes a holy thing. V'ad l'chatat karei rachmana, till it becomes something exaltedly holy. Navo, in other words, transformation of everything. Navo b'mhera b'yameinu mamash, we should come swiftly in our days, le'inim v'zarakti alechem ma'im to'orim uta'atem, to the idea of throwing on us, sprinkling on us the water of the red heifer, purifying us. Shia ba'ofen d'mayim to'orim, pure water. Prinat chasid, the quality of chasid. V'lo enyan rachatz havaya, and not the concept of God washing off the dirt of Benot Sion, which is suffering, God forbid. One of the ways of understanding what suffering is that God is washing the person. But it's something negative. K'yudua pitgam, as is known, the saying of the previous Rebbe, sh'b'inyan zeh ne'ma be'egelet ha'kodesh, that about this it says in Egelet ha'kodesh in Tanya, rak ha'lashon tzadik v'lo ha'lashon chasid, the expression tzadik and not the expression chasid. Now, we have here the page from Tanya. If you could just have a look at that for a second, please. Do you have it? Has it come out? You see, this is a letter by Rabbi Shneur Zalman. He's explaining to people, it's section 22 in Egeret HaKodesh. He's explaining to people that suffering comes from God. Kamo Avrahaman, like a merciful father, Chacham Tzadik, wise and righteous, Hamakebeno, who hits his child. She'ein leben Chacham lafoch oref, the wise child shouldn't turn his neck, lanus, to run away, limtzolo ezra, to find help from someone, or afilu melitz yoshe lifnei aviv, or even a counselor before his father who will defend him to the father. And the father is Havachaman, he is merciful, Vahatzadik, and he is righteous, Vachasid, and he is chasid. Now, the previous Rebbe points out that, without going into the whole context of this letter, which in itself is an extremely interesting letter, that it uses the word chasid on the third line, but it doesn't use it on the first line. And the reason why it doesn't use it on the first line is because on the first line it mentions the father hitting the child. So the father who hits the child, he might be righteous, but he's not chasid. So the word chasid can't appear there, so to speak. But chasid means a father who is kind to the child. And so in other words, what the Maimah means is that we should come to a level of relationship with Hashem where Hashem acts as chasid. In other words, it's not God washing the etzoat benot Zion by sending the impurities, washing them away through different kinds of suffering. No, God forbid. It should be only goodness and happiness. Ubefrat al yedei sha'avoda v'shamru derech Hashem lasot tzedakah u'mishpat, that we should, through the service of keeping the path of God, going back in the discourse now, keeping the path of God to do righteous and justice, k'mavuin yana b'viu azor, as it says, as it explains in a commentary on the Zohar, and he gives the reference, and it should tiyeh ba'ofen da'al nitbayesh mipnei amaligim, that one should do good things and not be ashamed before those who mock, al yedei zeh na'aseh haderech l'biat Mashiach tzedkenu. Through that, I wonder if it means we will make, or there will be made, the path for the coming of Mashiach Tzidkenu b'karav mamash, swiftly in our days. Um.